Chapter 5. The Alleged Procurer. Ghislaine Maxwell. Ghislaine Maxwell's birth was inauspicious. The youngest daughter of Robert and Betty Maxwell was born in 1961, just 2 days before their eldest son, Michael, was involved in a serious car crash that left him in a coma. 15-year-old Michael died 6 years later, having never regained consciousness. Betty recalled in her autobiography, A Mind of My Own, that the accident had cast a pall across the whole family and left Ghislaine with signs of anorexia, even as a toddler. Nevertheless, the bright and precocious child would go on to become her father's favourite over the 6 other surviving children. Anne, Philip, Christine, Isabel, Ian, and Kevin. Another child, Corinne, died at the age of 3 from leukemia. Intelligent, witty, charismatic, and manipulative, Ghislaine would impress people through her life with her intelligence, personality, and broad range of skills. She was a qualified helicopter pilot, a submarine and underwater ROV operator, and a trained emergency medical technician, and was fluent in 4 languages. She would come to be known mainly as a socialite, always spotted at the most prestigious events alongside some of the most famous and influential people on the planet. But the frivolous image belied a deeply intelligent, thoughtful, and talented personality. This undoubtedly came from her childhood, growing up under her mother's careful tutelage and her father's strict eye. Family Sunday lunches at Headington Hill Hall, their palatial Oxfordshire mansion, would involve Robert Maxwell grilling the children on geopolitics and current affairs. According to Maxwell biographer Tom Bauer, if the children made mistakes, they were beaten in front of the others. Bob would shout and threaten and rant at the children until they were reduced to a pulp, Betty wrote in her memoir. However, their father's authoritarian manner didn't seem to put off the children, who went on to study at Oxford University and became high achievers. Ghislaine called her father inspiring, and Christine called him a great educator. Always ahead of the game, Ghislaine remembered her father teaching her to program the early computers he'd installed at home in 1973, when she was just 12, according to British magazine Tatler. Ghislaine was educated at Marlborough and Oxford, where she studied at Balliol College and was friends with future high flyers such as Hugh Grant. But student life didn't release her from the tyrannical grip of her father. She reportedly avoided being seen in public with her boyfriends for fear of Maxwell Sr.'s reaction. After graduating, Ghislaine became well known in the British social scene, attending all the glitziest events. But she worked as hard as she played, becoming a director of her father's Oxford United Football Club and working for The European, one of the many newspapers owned by Robert. When Robert made the crucial purchase of US newspaper The New York Post, it was Ghislaine who flew to New York to oversee the transfer. In 1986, the mogul confirmed her status as his favourite by naming his 180-foot superyacht the Lady Ghislaine after her. When Robert Maxwell was found dead in the waters near Tenerife in November 1991, it was Ghislaine who was first into his private office aboard the yacht, where she shredded all his most incriminating documents, according to journalist John Jackson, who said he witnessed the scene. It was also Ghislaine who first addressed the press, saying she thought her father had been murdered. She repeated the allegation in several interviews and in her private conversations, according to Maria Farmer. Ghislaine was reportedly heartbroken by her father's death, taking it the hardest of all the children. Following revelations of Robert Maxwell's £440 million embezzlement of the Mirror Group's pension funds, she became persona non grata in London, so she wisely decided to move to New York. Perhaps unwisely, however, given the delicate nature of the family's reputation, she decided to fly on Concorde. In New York, she rented a $2,000 a month apartment in Manhattan, according to the New York Post, and began to sell real estate to supplement the $100,000 a year stipend her father had left her. It was in New York that she supposedly first met and started dating Jeffrey Epstein, who was beginning to make his way as a major financial and social player in the city. However, this narrative is challenged by two inside sources. Stephen Hoffenberg, founder and CEO of Towers Financial, the Ponzi scheme that Epstein had helped to run, told the authors of the book Epstein, Dead Men Tell No Tales, that Epstein and Ghislaine's relationship was older, going back to the 80s. And former Israeli spy Ari Ben Menashe corroborated this, saying that Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell had met and begun an affair in the 80s. According to Ben Menashe, it was through this relationship that Epstein became introduced to a career with Israeli intelligence, via her father, Robert Maxwell. Ben Menashe alleges that after Robert Maxwell's death, Epstein and Ghislaine embarked on a sexual blackmail operation in the US, which initially targeted Bill Clinton, as well as other leading politicians. This ties in with the testimony from Maria Farmer, who claims Ghislaine told her she had been sent to the US for Epstein to look after her, something which couldn't have been possible if they didn't already know each other. Whatever their background, in 1992, Ghislaine was officially working as Epstein's lady of the house, essentially running and organizing his day-to-day life. By some accounts, they were also in a romantic relationship, with Ghislaine desperate to marry the financial whiz. By other accounts, including Epstein's, they were best friends, who had dabbled in romance in the past. However, behind the scenes, they were allegedly already running a slick child sex trafficking operation, with Ghislaine allegedly acting as a procurer and facilitator for Epstein's sexual abuse of underage girls. Interestingly, there is a similar discrepancy between reports of when and how Ghislaine first met Prince Andrew. The official story is that they first met when Ghislaine was an undergraduate at Oxford. However, Maria Farmer says Ghislaine showed photos of herself as a child with Andrew and other royals, and claimed to have essentially been brought up around the royal family. Whatever the history of Ghislaine and Andrew's friendship, it clearly became more intense around the turn of the millennium. At about the same time, she was said to have introduced the prince to Epstein. An Evening Standard article from 2001 documents all the occasions on which the pair had been spotted together over the previous year. February 2000. Holiday at Mar-a-Lago Club in Palm Beach with Ghislaine, followed by a trip to New York to attend a fashion show with her. March. Fundraising dinner for London Symphony Orchestra in New York, attended by Ghislaine. April. Holiday to New York, where he socialized with Ghislaine. May. Official trip to New York, then holiday in Florida with Ghislaine. June. Weekend at Windsor Castle for Queen's birthday, which Ghislaine attended. October, official visit to New York and evening partying with Ghislaine. December, weekend house party at Sandringham, arranged in honour of Ghislaine's 39th birthday. January, a beach holiday in Thailand with Ghislaine. In addition, Ghislaine travelled to Britain in September to attend the wedding of Andrew's old flame, Aurelia Cecil. They went together. Epstein accompanied Ghislaine and Andrew on five of these trips, including the ones to Windsor and Sandringham, leading to the report to comment on the trio's curious symbiotic relationship. It also quoted the concerns of friends and family of the prince, who blamed the relationship for the change in his behaviour, including frequent clubbing and womanising, which was having an impact on his reputation and his relationship with his daughters, Princess Beatrice, 12, and Eugenie, 10. Could it be, as some sources have claimed, that Andrew had already been blackmailed by Epstein? Or, even further, that he had been drawn into Epstein and Maxwell's honeypot scheme, helping them to entrap other big players in their international blackmail operation? Whatever the truth, Epstein, Ghislaine, and Andrew retained close ties until 2010, when Andrew flew to New York to, as he bizarrely claims, sever the relationship in person following the tycoon's release from a Florida prison. Ghislaine continued to work as Epstein's consultant following the Florida arrest, and her focus shifted, along with Epstein's, to concentrating on forging links with top US technology and science providers, schmoozing some of the top entrepreneurs and scientists at Epstein's New York mansion, New Mexico ranch, and on his Caribbean island, Little St. James. In 2012, Ghislaine founded her own Terra Mar project, a non-profit ocean conservation scheme that sought to protect the 64% of the world's oceans that lie outside of national jurisdictions. Ghislaine gave a TED talk about Terra Mar and discussed the project with the United Nations. But the scheme died a death with the arrest of Epstein in 2019. It marked the beginning of the period when Ghislaine went into hiding. Speculation followed her whereabouts around the globe, from Paris to London to Israel. Ultimately, she was found nearer her adopted home of New York, in a hidden-away mountaintop retreat in New Hampshire, aptly named Tucked Away. Ghislaine's life, it seems, has been uncannily like her father's, with much of it lived secretly below the surface. Her trial, if it happens, and she survives to see it, could provide the public with access to secrets they were denied from her father. If so, there is much to come out. Who was she and Epstein really working for? What were the roles of Prince Andrew, the Clintons, Leslie Wexner, and a host of other big-name players? What was the ultimate goal, and how close were they to achieving it? How wide did their dark web of influence extend, and how many knew what was really going on? The mystery of Ghislaine Maxwell is far from over. Indeed, the mystery of Robert Maxwell himself abides, not just in Ghislaine, but in other members of the family. It may turn out that Ghislaine wasn't the only child who continued Robert Maxwell's clandestine work. Kevin and Ian took on the legacy of his above-board corporate interests, while Anne and Philip stayed largely away from the family business. But twin sisters Christine and Isabel may have continued their father's underground work, just as much as Ghislaine. According to research by investigative journalist Whitney Webb, Christine became the president and CEO of her father's technology company, Information on Demand, which was an early database search engine. This sounds innocent enough, except that Information on Demand was the company Maxwell used to sell the bugged Promise software to the US's Sandia National Laboratories, thus gaining Israel access to America's top nuclear secrets. Unlike most of the Promise sales, which had been handled by Maxwell's front company, Degum, the Sandia sale was handled by Information on Demand, as it was a US company. Christine remained president of Information on Demand until her father's death and the unraveling of his empire. Her twin Isabel also claimed to work for the company. According to Webb, after their father's death, Christine and Isabel set up their own internet service company called McKinley Group, which included Research on Demand, Christine's successor to Information on Demand. McKinley Group created an indexing and rating system for websites, which later morphed into Magellan, one of the earliest web search engines. In 1995, Isabel negotiated a deal with Bill Gates's MSN to use Magellan as its search engine of choice. Then, in 1996, after falling behind the competition, McKinley Group and Magellan were sold to Excite, later to become Ask Jeeves, netting the sisters a cool $18 million worth of Excite shares. In 1997, according to Webb, Isabel was approached by an Israeli tech firm, Comtouch, to become its US president. Isabel said she accepted the offer because of its Israeli ties, which were an affair of the heart and were to do with my father and my history. According to Webb, Isabel put the success of Comtouch down to the ties of all of its employees with Israeli military and military intelligence. Isabel's promotion of Comtouch to the US was noted as almost messianic, selling its systems to companies like Sun Microsystems and Cisco, and ultimately gaining investment from Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. All this despite the company remaining an obscure tech provider that had never made a profit. Paul Allen's investment led, unsurprisingly, to a deal to use Comtouch for Microsoft's MSN messaging service, and ultimately to its email service, Hotmail. During this time, according to Webb, Isabel formed a personal relationship with Gates and even persuaded him to make a personal investment of several million dollars into Comtouch. Comtouch was ultimately rebranded as Siren and today, according to Webb, runs in the background of Microsoft, Google, Intel, McAfee, and Dell products. Isabel left Comtouch in 2001 to focus on becoming a liaison between Israeli tech startups and US angel investors, creating Maxwell Communications Network in 2006. During this time, according to Webb, Isabel forged many close relationships with high-ranking Israeli politicians and intelligence heads like former Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres, former Mossad Deputy Director David Kimchi, and former head of military intelligence and Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who was implicated in Epstein's child sex abuse ring. Could it be that Isabel and Christine were continuing their father's legacy of selling bugged software to the US in order to facilitate Israeli intelligence gathering? Is it possible that programs run by Microsoft, Google, Intel, McAfee, and Dell were fitted with backdoors for Israeli intelligence in deals negotiated by the Maxwell sisters? We may never know, but perhaps a hint came from the mouth of Isabel herself. In a 2001 interview with The Guardian, while still president of Comtouch, Isabel told the newspaper that her father would love the internet if he was still alive, adding, "I'm sure he'd be thrilled to know what I'm doing now." The article noted that, on saying this, Isabel threw her head back and laughed wildly. Not much of a joke, you would think, unless she was making reference to continuing his legacy of spying for Israel. That is a joke her father would very much have enjoyed.